58 degrees and mostly cloudy. In New York City, 53 degrees and partly cloudy. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns. Thanks for listening.
There, this is Lady Murr. I want to thank May from Sunderland, Maryland, for being the sustainer to WPFW and pledging on Don't Forget the Blues. Thank you so much, everybody.
Good afternoon, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. You are tuned in to Taking Action on WPFW. Thank you for tuning in. Before we jump into today's show, I want to make sure that folks understand that we are celebrating 47 years of being in community with WPFW. For 47 years, WPFW has stood as the preeminent independent grassroots radio station that keeps your soul dancing and the gears in your mind turning. It is because of your support that over the years, WPFW has been able to be the original sort of grassroots organization, providing some independent thoughts over the airwaves. We ask you to go to WPFW.org to become a sustaining member and support the work that WPFW is continuing to do today. With that, I'm going to jump into our program for the day. I've got a pretty exciting show today. I've got a couple of guests with us today, Nicola Dyer and Kurt Elftman. We're going to be talking about the DC Dem Fest that's coming to Washington later this month. Nicola and Kurt, thank you so much for joining the show.
Good to be here.
Thanks so much, Corey.
Wonderful.
Great. And congratulations, by the way, before we start, congratulations on PFW's 47 years.
Right.
Yes, absolutely. WPFW has been such a staple of the community. We're happy to have the support of WPFW and happy to be one of the volunteer hosts on the station, one of more than 100 hosts on air at the current moment. With that, I'm wondering if you all can, I guess, first, I guess we'll start with Kurt and we'll go to Nicola. Am I pronouncing your name right, Nicola?
Nicola. Perfect. Thank you.
Wonderful. We're going to start with Kurt, and if you could just introduce yourself, tell me a little bit about how you came to hear about DC Dem Fest and then what got you involved.
Great. Thank you, Corey. I'm Kurt Elfman. I'm the producing artistic director of Tonic Theater Company, and we're based here in DC, and we do new works about history and or science. Sometimes those are combined, sometimes not. And our contribution to the Dem Fest will be a reading of a play by Richard Viteri called No Sense of Decency about Joseph McCarthy. And I became involved in the Dem Fest and with Paul because of Nicola. She's a board member for Tonic, and she connected the two of us. And there've been many fruitful conversations since then. And I think that's probably a good segue into Nicola.
Thanks, Kurt. And I heard about DemFest through Paul, who is the founder of Learning Life, which is the group that's organizing it. It's a non-governmental organization that is organizing the DemFest. And Paul and I had had many conversations previously, including about Learning Life's family diplomacy initiative. I had connected him with, for instance, a woman who had a wonderful conversation with her daughter online about democracy in their home country. So when I learned that Paul was organizing the Democracy Festival, I reached out to Kurt because I thought this is so in Kurt's and Tonic's wheelhouse. And we've been part of the volunteer organizing committee ever since.
Wonderful. Before I ask you all about DemFest, I'm going to just note that Learning Life is a Washington, D.C. based nonprofit that is building the inclusive and learning for communities to widen and deepen participation in democracy and diplomacy in what they just sort of describe as an unequal and divided world. I'm wondering, I guess, for one, what is DemFest, right? Like, what's that about?
Okay, I'm taking this one. So it's In part, it's recognizing that DC being DC, we have all kinds of festivals. We have festivals for you name it, for, as on the website, dance, flowers, marijuana, beer, all kinds of festivals. What about democracy? And so Learning Life decided to step into that to host the very first democracy festival, recognizing it's so important to Americans, it's important to people around the world. And so let's celebrate that. And let's also make democracy fun again. So this festival is very much oriented towards families and kids. That said, families and kids of all ages are more than welcome to come to it. And we would very much like to see so many people from DC coming to it. Kurt.
Exactly. And I can't think of a better place than the nation's capital to do the fest. But as Nicola said, we have all sorts of festivals for all sorts of things. And 4th of July is not really the democracy festival. It's, you know, birth of the nation festival. You know, it's our birthday as a country. But I think to be able to do a democracy festival, you know, do them around the country and have families come in, and not just families that are that live in the United States. But, you know, if you're traveling, if you're on holiday from another country, I think, and in Washington, D.C., especially with families from all over the world here on diplomatic posting, I think it's a great opportunity to meet them, to have them feel what democracy can be like in this country. Some of them are feeling that much less these days at home. I think the Democracy Festival is also something that could be exported, not just to other cities, but to other countries. You know, to hold a Democracy Fest in Ukraine next year would be absolutely amazing to me. I'd love to hold one in Russia. We can't, of course. We'd never get away with it. But I feel like some countries have for so long not known, or never, in the case of most of the Russian people, have never known a democracy. A true democracy, so they just don't have a sense of it, and sadly that's a little bit to me in the United States. Their kids growing up not really getting the full the full story of democracy, all its warts and everything that comes with that, and how we've gotten to where we are. So while we want to make it fun, we also there's also history to be learned there, not spoon fed or shoved down anyone's throat, but it can be there for everyone to see. And that's certainly part of the Dem Fest, so that that kids and families learn, warts and all, that we're imperfect, but democracy is a great thing.
And if I may add, it's nonpartisan.
Yeah.
So that's really important for us. So it's youth and family friendly. And here are the goals, just taken from the website: make democracy fun for all ages, widen participation in democracy, deepen civic learning, help grow the wider democracy learning community, as well as be financially self-sustaining. So that's a goal for this festival, is to be financially self-sustaining, and to foster creative collaboration, including folks in the DMV arts, like Kurt and Tonic Theater, education, business, philanthropic, and democracy sectors.
Right. And one of the great things about having the arts in there, it makes me immediately think back to Louis Armstrong and the Real Ambassadors, and they use jazz as a means to spread Americana around the world and to spread the word of democracy. And at the same time, of course, that wasn't ringing so true at home. We still have those problems, those warts that to deal with, but the arts are a great communicator. They open up doors, especially music, and to a great extent, spoken word. You can reach people across language barriers and bring them in, and that's a great starting point. That we're all human, and we all deserve freedom, and we all deserve to hear what we want to hear. What kind of music? What kind of literature? Everything that comes with being in a democracy.
Yeah, love that. And I especially appreciate the note on jazz as a liberatory art form, right? I'm wondering, it sounds like this is going to be sort of an interdisciplinary approach to promoting democracy at home in a local sense. So I guess on one hand, I guess I'd love to hear a little more about the sort of, you know, how you plan to weave the arts into the festival. But then also, I'm wondering also if you all can speak to the need to do this work locally in the hopes of building a sort of global sense of citizenship amongst people that are living across the world.
So we can both go on about that for a long time. It's a great question. Let me start us off just on what overall the activities are going to look like. There'll be some participatory discussions, so not so much the arts, but kind of informed by the arts. But they'll take place in very circular fashions, so that nobody is going to be the top dog and talking all the time. It won't be talking at, and we'll be talking with each other. There'll be games, there'll be comedy, theater. This is what Kurt is focusing on. Other performing arts that are focused on democracy-related issues. And by the way, any theater students who are interested in participating, it's not too late. Please raise your hand. Please go to the website, www.learninglife.info, or just Google Democracy Festival, and you can see how you can participate. And then there's going to be a democracy market, there'll be skills building workshops, there'll be, very importantly, so again, not quite with the arts, but important, there's going to be a youth citizen assembly on mental health. And that's going to take place for most of the afternoon. And that's really important because our youth today are having such, they're facing such difficult issues. And there is this mental health crisis. And then there'll also be a democracy learning community visioning session that's going to be giving committed area residents and committed area residents the opportunity to learn, think, and envision together what a vibrant democracy might look like. And that's to answer the second part of your question, Corey, before passing the flame to Kurt here. Is there are folks like me who I'm passionate about democracy, and I have worked around the world. I've seen democracies in various forms around the world, seen the importance of them to a healthy and vibrant society. And I am not an American citizen. I am a Canadian and UK citizen, and yet, thank you, DC. I am proudly registered to vote in the local DC elections because I hold a green card. So I am proudly and legally going to be voting in these elections. This kind of information about who can vote and who's eligible to vote and ensuring that we have the right information about that, that is really crucial. And that's crucial for democracies around the world and for fostering democracies around the world, getting the information out, ensuring that there's transparency, ensuring that there's accountability. I'm going to stop there and pass the flame over to Kurt.
Thank you. I would say, backing up just a little bit to kids being involved and mental health issues, just as with adults, being able to use the arts as therapy. If we think of soldiers coming back from many combat situations, they've used the arts to great effect to help them heal. I think the arts, especially letting kids act out, write out, speak about in a form of art, whether it's spoken word or poetry or play, or even music that they write, letting them be able to let that out and express it is a healthy thing. There is a movement that's been around for a long time, but it's growing now and it's getting scientific underpinning called the Health and Art Movement. There's a great book out called Your Brain on Art. It's Susan, I'm going to probably slaughter her last name, I think it's Magusman and Ivy Ross. Two scientists and artists who wrote this book. But basically, it talks about the benefit of the arts for our mental health, for making our brain more elastic and making it more healthy. And I think for kids to be able to express their anxieties and their fears, not every kid can go to a psychiatrist every week. This can help them get it out and express it. And I think that that's incredibly important. There'll be some of that at the festival. It is an opportunity for them to engage each other and talk about the issues. But I think we can do more of that all the time. You know, in elementary schools, I think that letting kids be able to express themselves in that way, whether it's, you know, they're okay and they make something really beautiful, or there's maybe, you know, domestic problems at home, or it's fear of gun violence, which, you know, most kids these days have, whether they realize it or not. I think it's a way for them to express that and to deal with it, whether they realize they're dealing with it or not. It's just a way for them to get it out there, you know.
And I'd like to add on to that with seeing that internationally and in a grant program that I manage that provides grants to women from developing countries who are studying in South African universities. We've seen women, for instance, who are using theater to help people to deal with serious trauma, like the trauma of rape, sexual assault, and just serious violence. Using the theater to be able to deal with that trauma is really important. The arts help people to access issues on a different level. Sure, an intellectual connection, but also it enables people to tap into the deep emotions. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention probably one of my favorite shows of all time, Star Trek, the importance of the original Star Trek in helping to deal with it, and science fiction in general, dealing with social issues in ways that people could deal with them, was a way to talk about really touchy, difficult topics, but in a way that made it socially acceptable. And I find the arts have this extraordinary capacity to do that.
Absolutely. I mean, it, you know, you talk about whether it's Star Trek or I can think of several plays that address very difficult topics, sometimes very complex topics, whether it's science or whether it's social issues, by citing a specific example, giving, you know, maybe it's a specific family or something, but arts are a great explainer of complex issues, and you can give not just one side, but all sides. And have characters fleshed out. And so an audience sees them and, you know, in the best practice, they come out of a situation where they've seen a show or heard, you know, spoken word, whatever it might be. They come out of it going, wow, I think my mind has been changed about that, you know, and that's what you want, at least to have them thinking and going, well, there's certainly more than one side to that situation. And that's what, you know, that's what we're going to try to do, certainly, Tonic, moving forward always, but in the DemFest as well. Although we're throwing a slightly darker light on what is a long history of toxic political situations in this country. But I'll leave that maybe for a little bit later. I just think that we can, that we have the opportunity to, with the arts, explain and convey, in this case, the positivity of democracy and also healing all at the same time.
Wonderful. I think that, you know, I definitely want to have a conversation about the more toxic history in relation to the moment we're in right now a little later, but I do want to take a moment just to sort of, one, thank the folks that are tuned in. Again, you're tuned into WPFW on 89.3 FM. Thank you so much for tuning in. I want to remind you also that we are celebrating 47 years of being in community with WPFW, 36 years commercial free. Thank you to the support. Thanks to the support, rather, of listeners here of WPFW. Exactly. And so, you know, we want to encourage folks, if you can, go online to WPFW.org and become a sustainer. You know, there's lots of programs you heard a little bit about earlier about jazz and liberation, right? You have Jazz and Justice on the air here at WPFW. You've also got shows like Human Rights and Justice, hosted by a dear friend of mine, Nikichi Taifa. And you've got shows like this, hosted by Empower DC, myself, Corey Shaw Jr., right? There's lots of really fantastic programming on the station with over 100 plus on-air volunteer hosts. So I just want to encourage you to go to WPFW.org and become a sustaining donor to WPFW. With that, I do want to sort of turn to a conversation before we open the phone lines. Nicola, you mentioned this piece on being eligible to vote. And there seems to me, as we sort of inch towards the more toxic moment in American political history that we're in, I'm wondering, I guess, one, why did you feel that was important to name? And then also, can you talk a little bit about what it means to be sort of a person who we neurotypically would not say is eligible to vote in this country, let alone at a local level?
Thank you. I have to say, first of all, I was really delighted to learn that DC had taken this measure, because it's not all cities that do, but you always hear politics is always local, and indeed, and I've served very locally on my co-op board, for instance, that is about as local as it gets. But what this gives me, and I'm really delighted for it, it gives me an opportunity to vote for my advisory neighborhood commissioners, for instance. And this is something that affects where I live. I can also attend meetings of local ANCs. For me, by the way, the acronym ANC always meant something very different, because South Africa is very much a part of my life. So that I had to switch gears on that. But to be able to connect with these local issues, for somebody like me who was chosen to make my life here, I retired from an international organization and explicitly chose to live here in DC. That's really important. Now, I've lived in the US since 1985 and have to say that I've been struck as I learned more about this country, living in Illinois, becoming aware of some of the racial disparities in this country that were different from what I grew up with. By no means was Canada perfect, and nobody, if anybody tries to tell you that Canada is perfect, they're looking through some extremely pink colored glasses, because Canadians are humans too. That said, it's very different. It's a fraught history here, and it's one that is really, if one is going to choose to live here, I think it's really important to try and understand it. So as part of that, it struck me, especially when I moved to the DMV, wait a second, people here, the citizens in the capital city of the country that is the one that is viewed as, or views itself, depending on what your perspective is, as the beacon of democracy around the world. Wait a second, these people, these citizens of this country don't have the same representation as other citizens of this country. And why isn't everybody upset about this? Why doesn't this feel like something that needs to be changed? So the more I look at it, of course, the more I realize that there are all kinds of considerations, political, racial, one might say racist, I might say racist, that come into play. And so for me, first of all, again, I chose to live here. When people ask me, are you going to become a citizen? I sometimes respond with, why? Why would I? I mean, I am here, I participate, and I intend to participate in the local democracy. But if I'm going to become a citizen of the US under these circumstances, I'm not going to have the same representation as anybody else in this country. So what is it? I'm going to be able to get jury duty. Okay, so that's a civic responsibility that we all know, love, and embrace. But I wouldn't have the same level of representation as people who live next door in Virginia or in Maryland. This does not compute. There's a real fairness issue there for me.
Yeah, I'll note that, you know, personally, I'm waiting for my jury duty summons. Okay, I'm ready to serve.
Always. And I can't. So
that said, though, I think that you're hitting a particular point here on the absence of full democracy in the nation's capital that makes it sounds like this particular program so critical, potentially in this moment in the city's history, where, you know, the city's in financial crisis, it seems like, and there's this larger conversation that we can have about disinvestment that occurs as a result of a lack of civic engagement, right? I'm wondering, as we sort of inch towards, I guess, conversations about the local, the national, and the international perspective, why do this? It sounds like the event is going to be taking place in Northeast. Why Northeast and not, say, Chevy Chase, Cleveland Park?
Excellent question. When we were looking for a venue, it was very important to us to find a venue in a place that represented the demography of DC. This is the chocolate city. And so when we were initially looking at venues like, say, Georgetown University, while they might have conference facilities and on a practical level, they're not near to a metro, but it didn't sit right with us because this is DC and we want this festival to be a festival for the people of this city. So this is why Northeast and why the Friendship Collegiate Academy, I don't think we've actually given the address yet. So it's at Friendship Collegiate Academy at 4095 Minnesota Avenue Northeast. It is right across from a metro station. There's parking. Do take the metro if you plan to come. It's ADA compliant. So people with disabilities will be able to attend as well. Inclusion is an important aspect of democracy. And so ensuring that our venue was ADA compliant as well is important. But most importantly for us anyway, is we wanted to be reaching the people of this city. Thanks.
Yeah. Wonderful. As we're sort of inching towards our halfway mark, I want to go ahead and make sure that folks know, again, you're tuned to WPFW. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to open up the phone line. So if you have any questions, please feel free to give us a call at 202-588-0893. Again, if you want to give us a call, maybe ask a question to the guests, or you want to join the conversation, you can call it 202-588-0893. Kurt, I want to come to you and ask, I guess, it sounds like you're doing a play at the festival. What's the play about and what's the relevance to the particular moment that we're in?
Great. Thank you. So the play we're doing a reading of it, since there isn't really time in the lead up as well as on the day out to do a full production. The play is No Sense of Decency, which is a reference to Joseph McCarthy's era and a phrase that was put to him, "Have you at long last no decency?" And it is it's a new play by Richard Viteri, who's a New York playwright. He will be down for the reading, so we'll have a great opportunity for Q&A. But what it addresses is the toxicity of Joseph McCarthy and the Red Scare and his army hearings and his bullying, his using just political weight to crush people's lives. And how that has certainly references to today. Most people don't realize that besides the army hearings and all of his investigations and the whole fiasco on TV where he destroyed people's lives, he literally destroyed the life of a fellow senator, Lester Hunt Sr. And what he did was he got dirt on Lester Hunt Jr., also known as Buddy, who was caught for soliciting a male police officer in Lafayette Square Park, which back in the 1950s, being a homosexual, was not legal, and actually a law that Senator McCarthy got passed said that you could not associate with anyone who's a known homosexual if you were in the United States government in any capacity. Well, McCarthy tried to blackmail Lester Hunt Sr. into quitting his reelection campaign for Wyoming senator. And his son, Hunt Jr., was all for his father continuing. It was assumed he would win, but Hunt Sr. just couldn't bear the pressure and whatever other things went on in his mind, and he took his own life. He committed suicide rather than have the whole thing come out, and it came out anyway. But so that toxicity, it's here today. And it's, if nothing else, it's worse because of social media. It can be magnified. It can be focused on someone like an ant under a magnifying glass. Social media gets on somebody. And we all know kids especially have committed suicide from bullying, from harassing. We've seen two election workers in Georgia whose lives were absolutely shattered by, you know, flat out lies. And that's the sort of thing that this echoes. It's not new in American politics. It's still there. And we need to talk about it, not around it, which, you know, I'm not a big fan of bashing the media in general, but the mainstream media could certainly do a better job of covering the toxicity. I know it's there all the time and we continue to lower the bar about it, but I feel like you can't lower the bar. You have to hold the bar up and go, okay, he's doing a mambo here underneath this thing. Mm-hmm. And we need to talk about that because, you know, the party on the right has gone full MAGA and there's nothing great about it. And they are bullying and belittling and doing everything except talking about policy that might make the country better. And I won't get on my soapbox too much, but that's what we're trying to reflect. And at its best, theater reflects society back at itself. And I feel like we're going to do that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much there. And I think that I first of all, happy for soapboxing. Soapboxing is welcome on these airwaves. I will say, you know, this particular festival, it's starting to sound like maybe, and I'll maybe do a little, I guess, you know, historical ground setting if I can. Because there's of course the present moment, which is, you know, we're seeing political violence unlike we've ever seen. We're also the things that come to mind are the two assassination attempts on from a president's life and January 6th, other things that have occurred since then, Gretchen Whitmer, who, you know, faced a kidnapping attempt, right?
Right.
It seems like democracy at a national level is imperiled. And I'm wondering if you all can maybe speak to the value of this program in having conversations about where democracy has gone and where it can go. And then, you know, once we get through that, I want to ask a question more about like the hyper-local stuff that needs to happen in Washington.
Right. I would simply lead off and with some people, you know, sometimes say we've got to turn the temperature down. Yes, but we have to sort of change the conversation. At some point, to me, we went from a point of I can disagree with you, and we can talk about those disagreements, and then, you know, we'll go have a beer or whatever, you know, or we'll have that disagreement over a beer, and then we're like, okay, see you later, man. At some point, we went from that to if you don't agree with me exactly, you're the enemy. It's on both sides, to be sure. But it used to be just the fringes, and now it seems to be everywhere. And again, you know, not to blame social media for all our ills, because they're only amplifying what's already there. But we've got to get to a point where we can sit down and have civil conversations again. And I think that has to be part of this festival. It's not expressly there. I think for this first year, it's good that it's maybe not. We want to set up that it's not going to be, you know, attention filled quest to find equilibrium. We want it to be fun. We want families and kids. But I think we can also open that door to, hey, let's just sit and have an open forum where you talk about, you know, your fears, your hopes, and, you know, why, what you think of the people who think that way and why. Let's understand where the wiring goes and where all of a sudden not connecting in any way anymore, and we're suddenly hating our fellow Americans, you know. So we have to get there. And I think just to before I hand it off to Nicola, just to one more thing would be that I think education wise in public education, the arts and the humanities, again, can help bridge that gap. You know, you have kids playing in their symphony orchestra together. You have kids acting in a show together. You have kids in choir together. It brings them together, and it does it for adults outside of school. So it can be like jazz, that universal ambassador that universal connector. And I think there's a problem in that the arts are not in schools so much anymore because of budget and a lot of other things. And I think that underpinning has to come back, because that underpinning is something that unites us.
Yeah, Kurt, you touched on the importance of finding common ground and the importance of having those conversations. And sometimes it's even within families that it's become so difficult to have those conversations. And what I miss about the kinds of conversations I was able to have mostly overseas is very rich conversations where we can disagree profoundly, but with respect and even admiration for the other side. And as you say, go have a beer or, you know, go have a meal together. Because what's actually, one can view differences as this is what we need to talk about. Our different perspectives are what bring value to our lives. If we agreed on everything, life could be kind of bland. And probably is papering over all sorts of important differences and perspectives. And maybe this is my Canadian-ness, but I really do believe in the importance of the mosaic. Yeah. So bringing those different perspectives together, you get something that's bigger. It's that synergy. It's bigger than the sum of its parts. So that's one. And the Democracy Festival, I think, is going at it. Let me just kind of take a random sample of some of what's going to be happening in the festival. So there'll be games and a democracy board throughout, but then some of the sessions that are envisaged, democracy, race, gender, and immigration, these are really important topics. And the folks who attend that session can add their perspectives to that, can listen to people who have been thinking about it a lot, but who could also contribute their thoughts to it. Polarization and authoritarianism, ditto. How about banned books reading? That's another favorite topic of mine from when I was a kid and reading books like Fahrenheit 451. Go look it up if you don't know what the reference is. Democracy in the DC region. Learn and discuss what's going on with democracy in the DC region, including how you can get involved. And if you're interested in DC statehood, see, I'm not advocating that yet. I might, but at this point, it is an option for getting that representation.
Advocating it. I'm absolutely
advocate away, Kurt. Advocate away. Family diplomacy. There's going to be a conversation, a moderated conversation on Zoom between different families, families from around the world, about their experience with democracy. So that gets to the beyond the US side of things. People should be able to, I hope, coming out of that discussion, see what's similar in their experience around the world, and oh, that's really different there. Or, whoa, are we really lucky here? Or, oh, maybe we need to think about doing it more like that, because maybe that's a better model. I don't know what's going to come out of that, but I hope it's going to be thought-provoking and lead to some more conversation afterwards. Then, of course, we hope to have conversations about the 2024 elections, democracy and disinformation, a topic that is near and dear to my heart, because I've seen disinformation in action for years. When I lived overseas, I lived in various countries in Africa and saw how disinformation was used to influence people to come to certain, well, to focus on certain issues rather than others, for instance. Or strengthening self and community in wards 7 and 8. Really hope to see participation from folks who live in wards 7 and 8. Please do come and join us. And then, of course, lots of focus on democracy in youth, democracy in media, hoping to see that. Economic democracy. As an economist, I really care about how ways democracy can, has, and is being integrated into workplaces and economies to improve the lives of workers and communities. Democracy and civic education, as Kurt was talking about, the importance of civics. It struck me, again, not having gone to school here in the US, but I remembered hearing about y'all having civics courses, civics classes in high school and the like. And I wondered, as I was seeing some of what was playing out here in recent times, are those civics classes still happening? Or are they addressing what is needed? And I'm going to stop on that note.
Well, I feel like those civics classes have, if they haven't gone away entirely, they've been streamlined, not in a good way, or whitewashed, or, you know, and in some cases they've simply gone the way of business ethics courses in an MBA program. You know, they just don't exist anymore. You know, and that's, you know, I'm not even making a joke there. That's a simple fact. I wanted to circle back, though.
As a former ethics officer, my laughter, which you could not hear, it was silent laughter, was was pained. Go
yeah,
on.
Yeah. I mean, it also comes down to our diversity, whether it's in diversity of thought, diversity of cultures in the United States. The melting pot is our strength. It's how this nation got built. And a lot of that has been erased from history, how much of it was built on the backs of slaves, but also the contributions of a lot of immigrants to this country that, you know, he who shall not be named, you know, seems to think are worthless, you know, or is constantly villainizing, you know, that diversity, that across the board diversity is our strength. And a lot of countries don't have that. Or not in enough quantity for it to be a great strength to them, and we can't be rid of it, or you know we'll implode, we'll crumble in, you know.
I did realize we've been promoting Tonic's reading quite a bit, but there are a couple of other arts features that I think it's important to mention. We're going to have a comedy show for Democracy. That's going to be put on by Grassroots Comedy. And there'll also be a showing of a documentary, a screening of a documentary called Join or Die. And I think that covers the arts at the festival, unless I'm missing something.
I believe that's it. It's not that there are a lack of organizations, arts organizations in the DMV with international or other sort of outreach or perspective. We have Mosaic here in the district. There is the Belarus Free Theater in the district. And I'm hoping that in future festivals, all of them, those and more will be represented at the festival, because they all have unique voices, whether it's LGBTQ plus or obviously the Belarus Free Theater speaks for itself. All of these theaters can be, you know, should be a part of it, because they're voices that are part of democracy and they can bring a positive message. And sometimes, you never know, a festival like this could be the first time somebody has exposure to any one of these groups. And, you know, if we can eventually get online with some live events that people can view wherever they are out in the, you know, in the countryside in Montana or around the world, I think we should. And I hope we can move in that direction, because democracy is about everybody. It's about inclusion. It's about bringing everybody into the conversation. So I hope that we can continue to move in that direction.
So Corey, for your listeners who might be curious, as we've been talking about democracy and the Democracy Festival, but if they just tuned in, they might be wondering when, where, what, huh? So it's Saturday, October 26th. So it's coming up. It's going to be from 1 to 6 p.m. at Friendship Collegiate Academy, 4095 4095 Minnesota Avenue Northeast in Washington, D.C. That's across from the Minnesota Avenue Metro stop on the Orange Line. Please, if you're thinking of going, we'd encourage you to purchase your tickets early. Go to the learninglife.info website. Learning Life is the organization that is putting this on. Go to their website. You can purchase tickets there. different prices for kids than adults. So it's really designed to get families to join. If you do want to volunteer to help, there's also links to volunteer there. There's many different ways to get involved. So please do, there's going to be all kinds of activities. The schedule is available if you go to the Learning Life website and you look up the, or you can just Google Democracy Festival DMV, that should bring it up as well. And you can see all of the activities that are planned, including, by the way, there will be a celebration at the end from 5 to 6. There's going to be music, food, speakers, raffle awards. If the kids or the grown kids are interested in raffle awards, there'll be socializing as well. And by the way, food will be available in the cafeteria throughout for purchase. And then at the end, there's going to be some food available at that that final celebration.
Thank you, Nicola. I'll just put in the plug that Tonic's reading of No Sense of Decency will be from 2:30 to 4:30, and that includes a talk back with the playwrights. So we will have signs up. We don't know our space yet in there, but we'll have signs up. So if you're around, the reading itself is free. Admission to the festival gets you into the reading as well. So we hope that you'll check us out while you're there. You're free to come and go. You're not locked into to watching the entire thing. There's a lot of other things to see in the short amount of time for our what we hope is first annual. So feel free to move around, but do stop by and see us.
And there will be childcare as well. So if anybody wants to, if some of the older kids want to go off, if some of the older kids want to go off as well and leave the younger kids in the capable hands of the volunteers who'll be providing some childcare services throughout, there will be registration on site as well.
Wonderful. I mean, I think that I especially appreciate the notion that like we're all children at heart, even us big kids. I'm wondering, as we're sort of wrapping up and we're coming sort of towards the end of our time together, I don't want to grandstand too much on the history. I should mention that like I'm a political science major. I'm also a historian and many other things. So I could grandstand on the history of Ward 7 and 8. I know the listenership of WPFW is maybe tired of me doing that, but I will say, as we're sort of coming to a close, Ward 7 and 8 have been historically disenfranchised, disinvested in. And I'm wondering, as we're sort of coming to a close in these last like 5 or 6 minutes, if you all can speak to the importance of democracy in communities like Ward 7 and 8, in Black and Brown communities, and why it's important to restore access to democracy in today's sort of, you know, moment.
Oh, thanks, Corey. That's a topic that I too can grandstand on. So I'll try and keep my grandstanding to a minimum. For me, having moved to the US and having learned much more of the history than I knew when I was growing up, the historic inequities and what I've now learned about the structural issues, they strike me deep, and it's something that I feel is really important for us to be very active about. So as we were organizing this DemFest, we really, several of us were extremely, we emphasized the importance of outreach to all of DC. And as Kurt mentioned earlier, we did look hard for venues in Ward 7 and 8. The fact that we're not holding it in Ward 7 or 8 doesn't mean that we didn't look. On the other hand, we so welcome participation from people who live in Ward 7 or 8, people who are active in democracy issues there, people who aren't but who are curious, people who feel disenfranchised. It's really the conversations that I hear in the different wards, because I listen to them, tell me that there are some gulfs that really, well, we're all humans, but after that, there are some real gulfs in the experience. And I think it's important for folks to understand the different experiences. So if you live in Ward 7 or Ward 8, please do come and share your experience, because it's important for people who don't and who maybe think it's scary to cross the river, which, by the way, I don't. I cross the river all the time. But that's not everybody. Come share your experience. It is really important that people find ways to connect or begin to understand that different experience. And you know, having seen examples of what for me are outrages of different treatment, Ferguson was a wake-up call for me, knowing that people were being jailed. Essentially, they were going to debtor's prison. This did not compute for me. These are the kinds of, and many other issues of structural inequity and racism, got to be addressed, and got to do it through the national as well as the local conversations. I'm going to step back from my soapbox now.
It's true that of course they've been under-resourced for almost since the beginning. I always look at anything that I see is through the prism of the arts. It just is, and I would say that part of getting 7 and 8 more to participate more in democracy is also, the neighbors have to help out. There is a lot of art. There are museums. There's a lot to do in 7 and 8. Go there. It's not scary. You're not going to die. Find out about the people there. They're us. They're your fellow Washingtonians. And there are two wonderful arts centers out there. And it's sometimes hard to get audiences to come out. I have friends who have done shows out there. We looked at doing a show there, then the pandemic hit. It just takes, I don't want to use the cliche, but it takes a village, and DC is a big, big village, and we've got to get out there and support our neighbors across the river. It doesn't mean you go out there and gentrify, but it does mean you can spend some money out there. I don't want to equate successful democracies with capitalism, but a little money never hurt anybody. And if you can spend some money at the museums there, and some of them are part of the Smithsonian, I'll bet people don't realize that. Or at the Anacostia Art Center or at the Anacostia Theater, you just go out there. And part of lifting people up is the economic equation. And if we're going to freeze them out and also underfund them, it's really difficult for folks to have any kind of faith that the system is working for them. So you got to reach out, and it begins, at home. So just do it, go out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, first of all, appreciate the plug for Anacostia, Southeast Washington altogether. I will say, sort of as in my last minute here, one, you all are comfortably still in Ward 7. Friendship Collegiate Academy is in Ward 7, and it's still properly east of the river. Yep. And so you all are still nestled well in the little commonwealth of east of the river. That said, as we sort of come to a close, I want to first thank you both for coming on the show and sharing this information with our listeners. I'm sure they appreciated it very much. Again, for our listeners, we are celebrating 47 years of being in community with WPFW. And so if you haven't already, please go online to WPFW.org and donate and become a sustaining member to support the programming on this station. With that, again, thank you both so much for joining me. This has been Taking Action on WPFW.
Thanks, Corey.
Thank you, Corey.
Fall is a time of change and impermanence. What never changes is WPFW's unwavering commitment to providing reliable news, informative public affairs, and exceptional music that inspires both action and introspection. From October 14th through November 3rd, we celebrate The Circle Unbroken, 47 years of being in the community with WPFW during our Fall Pledge Drive. We invite you to be in community and solidarity with us by making a donation at WPFWFM.org to ensure that this independent grassroots media outlet not only survives, but thrives. It is with your generous support that we build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. Only a few weeks remain until Election Day, and today, Vice President Kamala Harris and former President Donald Trump are making their way to battleground states as they race to make their final pitches to voters. Harris is expected to participate in a radio town hall in Detroit tonight at 5 p.m., hosted by a popular male radio host who goes by the name Charlemagne the God. Harris's aim is to appeal to black male voters after announcing her plan yesterday to give black men more economic opportunities, as polls show that she is underperforming with that demographic, which is traditionally Democrat. Meanwhile, Trump is speaking about the economy in Chicago, and then he will head to Georgia to tape a town hall before an all-female audience. According to the latest CNN poll, there is still no clear leader in the presidential race, with an average of 50% of likely voters supporting Kamala Harris and 47% backing Donald Trump. Today, the Supreme Court overturned a lower court ruling from Pennsylvania that allowed state residents under 21 years of age to carry firearms in public. Like 31 other states, Pennsylvania had set the minimum age for certain gun rights at 21 years old. The issue that the Supreme Court decided on was that Pennsylvania barred 18 to 20-year-old people from openly carrying firearms during a state of emergency, including the one declared during the COVID-19 pandemic. Three individual plaintiffs who wanted to carry weapons for self-defense and two gun rights groups challenged the Pennsylvania law. However, the High Court's decision today to keep the 21-year-old limit in place tosses out a federal appeals court ruling that claimed the law violated the Second Amendment. The Supreme Court did not explain their ruling today, and no dissents were noted. The Walgreens company operates the second largest pharmacy store chain in the United States, behind CVS Health. And today, Walgreens representatives announced that they will close about 1,200 store locations in the U.S. over the next 3 years to combat struggling business in America that resulted in a $3 billion quarterly loss. Currently, Walgreens operates about 8,500 stores in the United States and a few thousand overseas. According to company leaders, about 500 stores will close in the current fiscal year, which began last month and will run until September 2025. Walgreens said they will prioritize closing poor-performing stores where the property is owned by the company or where leases are expiring. Company leaders expect the store closings to immediately support earnings and free up cash flow. To the D.C. area, Mayor Muriel Bowser took to social media this week to encourage D.C. residents to save the date for the D.C. Hires Vets Serving Those Who Served hiring fair on Thursday, November 14th. The fair will be held at the D.C. Armory in Southeast, and registration for the event opens on November 1st. On social media, the mayor encouraged eligible ones to get their resumes ready and practice their interviewing skills ahead of the registration. More information on the D.C. Hires Vets Fair can be found at dchr.dc.gov. Again, that's dchr.dc.gov. In today's weather, it's currently about 57 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe, and thank you for listening.